Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along as we begin our program today by taking a look at the hows and the whys of having a well-insulated home. And we've got a couple of experts for you today as we talk insulation with them. Gary Rockweiler is the founder and president of Rockweiler Insulation. It's a family-owned company in Verona, Wisconsin. Founded it back in 1983 and have been a very successful company. So it's great, Gary, great to have you with us. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
And Renee Wilson is the vice president of operations for the company and is also Gary's daughter. And she's been with the company since, what is it, 1990?
1990 part-time, and then once I graduated college, 1995 full-time.
So this is a busy time for you folks, I bet, as the weather starts to cool down a little bit.
The weather cools down, our phones warm up, it seems.
Well, let's start with the basics here. What does insulation do year-round, Anna, for a home?
It's a weather barrier, whether it be warm or cold. The heating plants or the cooling plants of the house have to work with the whole system of the house to create the best living environment and the most efficient without losing energy. Insulation is the guard for that, I guess. It's the overcoat for the house in the winter, and it's certainly the overcoat in the summer. We expend a lot of energy with air conditioning systems. Now, today's society has much more air conditioning done than there was 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
So that makes the insulation more of a year-round value than just a winter value.
Yeah, absolutely. What are some of the symptoms that you might see for a poorly insulated home? I guess too hot in the summer and too cold in the winter, or what?
Well, it used to be people would say the snow melted off the roof, you know, and circumstantially that can be accurate, but not always. That can depend on slope of the roof. If it's pitched to north, south, east, or west, where sunlight hits it most, it can be an indicator, but it's not the only indicator. The obvious one is thermal usage.
Yeah.
You know, if people just check with their utility companies and find out what's an average thermal usage for a building in their area and their type of building and see where they land against that, that's the easiest. But discomfort, creature comfort is really a bigger telling point inside the home. People know when it's too drafty, too cold, too many blankets on at night, the furnace is running constantly, those type of things.
Yeah, those types of things. In terms of materials, there have been some traditional materials, but certainly there are some relatively new things that are out there now that are really helping with insulation, I think. And Renee, do you want to talk about that for a moment?
Sure. Well, traditionally, we've used a lot of the fiberglass insulation and some cellulose insulation as well. It kind of depends on what area of the house you want to increase the value, and some materials perform better in certain areas of the house than others. And of course, the spray foam insulation is the latest and greatest that everyone is buzzing about for the past few years. And there are certainly some great, great areas of the house that is the best product.
Yeah, we have that little of that in our new old house that we completely remodeled. We used some of that on the rim joist areas, and I think it made a big difference.
That's the ideal fit in new or existing buildings for the foam product. Had it been available 40 years ago in the form it is today, easy to work with, probably the switch would have been made then by new construction to include the rim joist and the box sill. For folks that aren't familiar with what that would be, that's if you're in your basement and you look where the foundation is, the foundation wall ends and the wood framing starts. The stringers that you see over your head that hit the end plate, that's the box sill in the basement. The similar situation would be between floors that you can't see. There's another box sill area called the sill box, and that goes between the floors. Those areas don't get much heat source to them, but they're very thin. They don't have the same full value of the R values that the wall system gets. So the foam is the perfect perfect application, and it also retards any airflow. It's a draft stop, and you can get a good yield of R value in a small space.
Yeah, we've been a really tight home as we used it that way, and then dense pack insulation in the walls, kind of between, and house is pretty tight.
Yeah, that's the key to it all, Larry.
We have callers, lots of callers online to visit with you. Again, the number to call to join in, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org and go to our Facebook page, too, at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post there. And by the way, you should go to the page anyway, because we have some great photos from Rockweiler Insulation that show kind of how it should be done, I think. I really like those photos, Renee. They're wonderful.
They show exactly how dirty and how they get into all the different areas of the home, and our mm-hmm. installers get crawl into very small spaces to make sure that your home is well taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go to Mark in Green Bay. Mark, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry. This is a very timely subject, and I've got a question about my garage remodel. I've got a very deep three-car garage that we want to trick out into a man cave, and I'm putting 4 feet of reclaimed barn siding. 4 feet of that. On top of that will be drywall. And my question is whether or not I should put a vapor barrier over the insulation. It will never be air-conditioned, but we are considering a wood burner for possible future intermittent use. And my concern is to allow the accumulated summer moisture to get out of the insulation. Mm-hmm. Can you advise me? And I have been getting conflicting advice from fiberglass insulation manufacturers, so I'm kind of confused.
Okay. Gary, you want to take a shot at that?
Yeah, that's actually, Mark, that's a question I've handled a lot over the years. The key ingredient always seems to be, what percentage of the year do you think you're going to put heat to it? Yeah, let's for right now not talk about the summer situation, but it really comes down to, are you going to heat it much in the winter? Would it be 40%, 60%, 20%? What do you think you'd be doing in that regard?
If we did put a wood burner in there, it might get used, I would guess, maybe once every 6 to 10 days at the very most.
So about once a week at the most.
Okay. Well, the situation would be, the wood burner is going to generate a little more moisture than other types of heat source. And that's what you got to be cautious with. The summertime, you could always put a dehumidifier out there and control your moisture level that way, or just run fans with the door open. That's kind of the simple way, but it doesn't require a whole lot of engineering and mm-hmm. mechanical system. But the key is in the wintertime. If you're going to get moisture inside that wall in the winter, it won't leave. It can't leave. And you've got to protect at that point. My advice would be to put the Visqueen on and maybe run that wood burner a little more than you planned on, in order to keep heat going into the building and make the plastic work for you, or the vapor retarder work for you. But the problem is going to be, if you don't put it on, you can't correct it. You're going to have problems.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Mark. Julia in Mondovi, it is your turn. Hi, Julia.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. We have an old house built in the 1950s. It's a one-story house that has 9-foot sidewalls. It's like a craftsman-style house, so it has an attic that has a large pitch. It has like a 4-foot knee wall type, because it's so tall.
Yeah.
We're not going to finish it. But we know there's no insulation, little or none, in the sidewalls. And what we'd like to do is keep the integrity of the house, so we don't have to change that look and put, a drop soffit along the eave sides. So what we were wondering is about insulating the sidewalls. It probably sounds like dense pack. Larry did. Maybe that would be a good thing, because we are going to re-side it. But we're also looking at having to add insulation to the attic. And so we're wondering, if we didn't want to ventilate, we put a new roof on, we didn't put any ventilation in the roof, and we just thought, we have to insulate it somehow so the attic won't get so hot that it'll transfer that heat down to the living space. But is there a way to go with a non-ventilation and just, finish it to keep that integrity? Because, it doesn't have any soffit area. We'd have to build it and all that, and that would lose the look of the house.
We hit some gray areas there, Julia.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, is your attic a walk-up attic where you can walk on the attic floor, or is it open raftered?
It's open raftered. It does have some, it's kind of a hit and miss. It does have some boards where you can walk on, but It is like more. People are talking like creating like a hot roof terminology, but.
Well, when we've hit this before, honestly, you can insulate that open area attic. You can insulate that to R60, whatever you'd like. If there's no ventilation up there, probably the safest thing to do is insulate it and monitor it for a couple of heat seasons. If there's no intense frost buildup on the underside of the rafters, then it's ventilating well. And I know this sounds like the cart before the horse, but you really won't. It's a more economical way to do it. If you don't need to ventilate first, then why spend the money to do it? If you find you've got the frost buildup, you could always have someone come back and put on roof pot ventilators for you if you don't have them now. And that should alleviate it. But if you don't have the soffit now and the attic has integrity and it's dry, then it should stay that dry if you put more insulation up there. Because all you're doing is really stopping more heat flow from getting into the attic. And the heat flow is what builds up the moisture and the lost heat and builds up the frost. So you really should be removing yourself farther away from a problem than closer to it.
So would you insulate the attic floor? We do, when we roofed, we did put a ridge vent in the full length of the gable roof.
So you've got ventilation.
So there is ventilation there, but there's just no soffit to carry the ventilation up and out. But would we just, people have told us, you know, like, why don't you do the roof joists, insulate between the roof joists and then just create a hot.
I think I see what you're saying. No.
Yeah, but I was thinking we should just do the attic floor
And what happens, Julie, is if you've already got insulation on that attic floor, and now you take that person's recommendation and go up the roof joist with additional insulation, you're creating like a airlock up there, a dead zone that could actually accumulate more moisture on the upper insulation because you've now got two layers. And it would interrupt your ventilation. I would say go with insulating the attic floor and your ventilation's fine. And then do the annual check. Wait till you've had a prolonged period of cold. Let's say it's been in the 0 to 10 above area for maybe 2 or 3 days. Then go up and take a look. If you don't have frost buildup on your nail head, you know, the nail ends that stick through and from the sheathing, that's the first place to look, or even down on your rafters. If you don't have that, then it's ventilating as well as it should. It's fine. Leave it be.
Mm-hmm. There
would
you go.
Need an air exchanger or anything for the downstairs, considering we just have a bath fan and a range fan, since that would be so tight?
Well, it's not going to tighten the house up particularly. It's going to stop the heat flow going through the top. Tightening a house comes up with new window and door installing where you do a lot of foam work around that, and you stop the drafts in the main cavity. But what you're doing, you'd simply just be adding to the insulation at the top level, which is going to save a lot of energy. But I don't think it's going to make your house a whole lot tighter unless you go through before you insulate and air seal all the bypasses, all the cord holes and the plumbing chase holes and all that, which that's a very common practice to do that. You'll interrupt the building science a bit with that, but not totally if you don't do anything with the sidewalls. So back to your exchanger. I'd hold off on that, too. My theory has always been do it in incremental steps. Why spend all the money at once? Maybe you wouldn't have had to spend the amount you're spending if you just take time to watch what the first process does and get a result.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call very much, Julia. Talking about insulating your home today with Gary Rockweiler and Renee Wilson of Rockweiler Insulation, a family-owned company in Verona, Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will continue our discussion of insulating your home with Gary Rockweiler and Renee Wilson of Rockweiler Insulation and go to Pete in La Crosse. Pete, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and guests. We have a home handyman on WPR from time to time. We talk about the bits and pieces of wall construction. But and they mention things like vapor barriers and rain plane on the outside, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm looking for a discussion on the wall as a system. How do we correctly apply the vapor barrier? You know, this is for space that's occupied full-time, summer, winter, et cetera. Around here, what's the best practice as far as vapor barrier, rain plane? You know, the whole wall as a system is what I'm looking for some information on.
Very good question. The wall as a system is something that we try to explain to a lot of folks because a lot of people don't see it as a system. So thanks for introducing that. The vapor barrier should always be applied to the warm side, always. Never to the outside unless it's going to be a refrigerated unit of some sort, like, you know, a walk-in freezer. Then you'd want it on the reverse side. But that doesn't happen in ordinary life. So so it should always be on the warm side. Just a little clarification. A few years ago, less than 3 or 4 years ago, they changed the name of vapor barrier to vapor retarder because it became very apparent that no vapor barrier was truly a barrier. They all leak somewhat, and the drywall screws, everything that goes through it, puncture it eventually. And so it never really stayed a vapor barrier. So I would imagine for legal sake, most of the manufacturers called it a vapor retarder. But always put it on the warm side. There's a system out there that we have access to called the WUFI, W-U-F-I. It was developed by a fellow we sometimes have contact with, Lucas. What's his last name, Renee?
Hamilton.
Lucas Hamilton, thank you. He developed it, and it is a fantastic program. I just want to address this just for a little bit to tell you that the program that he developed, you factor in the home, what construction process you used, be it brick, vinyl, aluminum siding, whatever outside systems you use, the framing dimension, the type of insulation, the finished product inside, the number of inhabitants. I mean, he puts so many factors in. Then he puts the locale and the climate from the locale. And then he can compare what would be the best insulation or wall system for that area geographically where you live. So should you be using brick in this climate? Should you be using some of this? And it isn't all clear cut, because if you use brick and you use a smaller dimension framing, and I mean, you can skew this thing a lot of different ways. But if you see this system, it is outstanding.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you, Pete.
Sure.
Yeah, appreciate your call very much. We had a Facebook question from Gary, and for you guys, for Gary and Renee. Is there a way to find out how much, if any, insulation is in the walls of our old farmhouse besides tearing off the siding or the inside? What do you think, Renee?
Well, usually that's the way we do it, is trial and error, but we can also go with a thermography camera if there's a great enough temperature differential between the inside of the house and the outside, and take a picture and see where those leaks are and where there's the inefficiencies. But a lot of times we just have to go and start and
dig
drill
some
a hole,
holes
and sometimes there's insulation there, and then we say, okay.
I think there was one farmhouse years ago that I lived in and rented at the time. We got into the wall, and the insulation was old newspapers. It was kind of interesting reading the old newspaper.
That's
it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing all the different things that people use to insulate walls.
Oh my!
Years
goodness.
Ago.
Yeah. So there you go. And you could, I suppose, too. One way to do it would be to have a home energy audit. You could do a home energy audit, which would help at least tell you basically how much insulation you had, because you'd be able to see.
Oh, yeah. There's another shortcut I used to use years ago. It isn't the most scientific, but I would work my way around the house and take off the switch covers, because quite often the electrical box wasn't always directly centered under the switch cover, or there'd be a larger cutout. And you could actually see next to the outlet box whether or not there was any insulation in the wall, or Ted, take a plastic prod and go up in there, and a lot of times you knew the cavity was
nothing.
Void. Yeah, it was pretty homespun method, but it worked pretty good.
We had another Facebook question, this one from Sandra. I have a garage below my bedroom. How can I insulate the garage ceiling inexpensively? I rent, so she's renting this place, and can she...
You know, unfortunately, that's kind of a touchy area, and inexpensively is the catchword there. It's very difficult to do a garage under without invading that space. The most common way we do it, I got to back up and say, when the homes were built, if this was a building, say, 40, 50 years old, probably the layer of insulation they'd put in there would have been a R11 3.5-inch, or maybe an R19, a 5.5-inch bat. And so that still leaves most of the framing members where they're 2x8, 2x10. So it still leaves leftover room, of course. The key to all this is to get around what would be that rim joist or box sill area of the garage. If you seal the ends where the air can get in there and get above that insulation, you seal that off, then the airflow can't occur. But to do that, you've got to pretty much take down the drywall and get up in there and do that. A lot of times we go in and people want us to just drill holes in the drywall, and we take a 1.5-inch clear tube and do our dense pack, push the bat up, and just blow it until we've filled up that cavity and We have to put in quite a few holes to do it, and then we put a styrofoam plug in the, where the holes were. They're inset about a 16th of an inch so they can be drywall patched over, and that's the way to do it. But short of that, there's just no shortcut to it. That's a difficult area to address, and there's no quick fix to it.
Roland in Wausau, it's your turn next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've added insulation. We have a one-story house. It was built in the 50s. I added insulation to the ceiling. It's got a partial crawl space. I also insulated that. We attended a seminar on this reflective material placed over your insulation, and it sounded like a good idea. I went to a home improvement store. I found it for like a tenth the cost, install it myself. Is there any advantage? It's styrofoam, aluminum on both sides, and I realize it has to be ventilated, but you know, you can't set it up as a vapor barrier over your insulation in your attic. But is there a advantage to it?
Or no advantage?
Well, it's one of the products we researched in terms of marketing and using. And we get lobbied a lot by a lot of marketers, and we have to evaluate which products we feel most comfortable standing behind. And that was one that didn't make the grade with us. Now, they market extensively in the South where there's warm weather year-round, and I think it works better there. The problem up here is that when you put another foil a surface over your existing insulation, there will be heat loss regardless of the amount of insulation you have. There will be some form of heat loss going up through that insulation. With heat comes moisture. And when you stop that moisture with a foil barrier or even an insulation, a faced insulation bat, you're sending that moisture back down into your existing insulation, which is not good. It will stay there. It won't leave. It'll eventually affect your framing members, affect the drywall at times. It traps moisture. Anything that traps moisture above your attic insulation is not a healthy thing for your house.
Okay. That's good. Exactly the answer to my question.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And lots more callers here as we visit with Gary Rockweiler and Renee Wilson from Rockweiler Insulation of Verona, Wisconsin, talking with them about insulating your home. Diane in Madison has a question for you guys. Let's go there. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I'm calling to find out what you would suggest. I have new insulation 3 years ago, I believe, and I have a new roof, 5 years old, and I put more vents in my soffits, but since the insulation, I have ice dams on my east side.
So... how did that happen, Gary?
Yeah, well, you know, the inside our office, the favorite term this time of year and through May will be ice dams. We seem to have plenty of reason to discuss that topic. It could be there for a variety of reasons. I will first disqualify myself. I quit crawling attics just a few short years ago. I'm too old to make it through there anymore. But in the meanwhile, we've developed a couple of specialists inside our company that can – these guys are – they're really good at evaluating why this stuff happens. To try to give you an answer without seeing the building would be foolish. I'd never try to do that. But evidently, it could be a ventilation problem. A lot of times, ice dams are caused by heat meeting the cold. And if you're ventilated well, sometimes that moisture can be carried away without more insulation if there's not an ability to put any more in there. I wish I had an answer for you that I could just shoot to you quickly and make it go away. Probably an evaluation would be better. And I see you're in the Madison area, so we do free estimates. If you'd like to call our office, 845-7625, one of the folks there would be more than happy to come on out and take a look and maybe give you better advice than I can sitting here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it was your company that did my insulation.
I thought we might get to that.
Yeah.
have us come back. Make sure you call us at the office and have us come back. And
okay.
We'll try to solve that because we don't want to leave a problem.
All right. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And we have a question from Deb here. Was there a Facebook or an email question, I guess. Is there a correct way to caulk vinyl-clad windows on a house with vinyl siding. My understanding is that the vinyl siding moves a lot with temperature changes. Does this affect how windows should be caulked for weatherproofing? Well, that's a little out of your area.
Yeah, it is. You know, we don't do that as part of our business service, and I could probably answer it, but probably not as well as someone that's, you know, more attuned to that. A window installer guy would be probably a better qualified guy than us.
Let's go to Lyman in McFarland then. Lyman, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. I have a question about insulating a furnace ductwork. We have an unfinished basement, and the ductwork runs along the ceiling, so it's very easy to get to. And I plan on sealing all the joints with a special, you know, furnace mastic, that UL 181 stuff. And then I would like to avoid wrapping this in fiberglass, just because I really hate working with fiberglass, and we have a lot of long runs. And so I'm thinking about using this bubble wrap, which is foil-faced on both sides. It's only about a quarter of an inch thick. And I'd just like to know what you think about using this on furnace ductwork.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's a little out of our area, but I think it shouldn't be a problem. What I would want to do first, I think, if I was a homeowner, was check with your building inspector, your code inspector, and see that it's approved to put in that circumstance. If he approves it, gee, why not? And you're doing the right thing. We advise people a lot. There's so much heat loss in that ductwork, mm-hmm. and folks could recover a whole lot of the energy they're wasting by doing that ductwork sealing. So kudos for you for finding that out and going to take care of it. One more thing, if you really want to know if it's productive, call one of the home energy auditors. They've got testers they can put on the end of the run and tell you if you're getting the right amount of flow for the distance of the run from the furnace, and that might verify what you're doing.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Dan in Toma, Wisconsin. Hi, Dan.
Hi. How are you, Dan?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
A couple of things, really. I am just about to have a geothermal system installed in my home. That's about a 3,000-square-foot home that was built 20 years ago. When we bought the house 10 years ago, we found that the attic was not adequately insulated. So we've got R50 up there now. Our tucked under garage is not insulated, however. And I'm using that as a workshop now to build cabinets and stuff. I'm retired. And I was wondering the best way of insulating that space. And also the best way of insulating a basement. We're looking at finishing off our basement.
Okay.
Well, back to the earlier caller that mentioned about the garage under the heated area. That would be the best way. If you've got the time, if you've retired and you're a handy kind of a guy, gee, take down the drywall, re-insulate it.
Yeah.
You know, that works. That's the easiest way to answer that, or have a insulation.
Well, I've got access it's a one-and-a-half-story house, so there's a big open space above. I get in from above, but I'm not sure what kind of vapor barrier there is. Is there a batting insulation that's wrapped with plastic or whatever that can solve that barrier problem?
If there is no insulation above the garage, then you can lay down bats with a facing on one side, and you want that facing to be towards the heated side, which would be down. If there's already insulation up there, then, again, referring to a previous caller about putting an additional vapor barrier up, you can't put another piece of anything that will stop airflow and moisture flow. You can't do it. What you can do is get vapor barrier paint and paint the underside. And that's not the best way, but it's some attempt to stop moisture flow from going up through the ceiling.
Okay. Now, we've got a poured concrete walls in the basement. Would the best way to insulate that just be spray foam?
That's the most expensive way. The way we suggest to folks, probably the easiest, simplest way to do it, when you're building your frame wall, Don't put the frame all in place. Lay it down on the floor in front of you and put a half inch or three quarter inch Thermax on the backside. Flip the wall up so you've got a sandwich now of the styrofoam between the backside of the frame wall and the concrete, because the concrete is a forever wick. It will bring moisture up from the ground as long as that building exists. So what you're doing is isolating the wood and your conditioned area away from that moisture by putting the styrofoam up. And that in itself would be a good insulator. Plus, you can then fill the cavity if you build a 2x4 with an R13 bat. You've really made a nice dry system, and that's what it's really all about. Below grade is dry.
Yep. Is there any problem with mold building up on the styrofoam behind the...
No, not at all. Mold and concrete won't grow or support mold. One caveat to this: make sure you put no vapor barrier there. You put that styrofoam between the wall and the frame wall. You can put an insulation, but do not put any kind of vapor retarder on the inside below grade. That doesn't work.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. What kind of, Jeff in Cedarburg wonders, what kind of insulation should be used around the sill plate in an unfinished basement? I have unfaced fiberglass there now. Renee, you want to take that?
That is an ideal spot for spray foam insulation. Yeah. And we do that quite a bit this time of year, where we will actually remove the fiberglass insulation from those areas and install the spray foam, because that acts as a great air block.
Perfect. All right, on to Mike in Spring Green. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, I recently moved into a house that's 20 years old and haven't had a winter here yet, but it looks like a pretty sturdy house and is well insulated. But what I've got on the roof is electric exhaust fans that I've never used before. And when should I be using those? And are they, they're really loud, though, so I don't want to have them running too long.
Yeah, that was pretty common practice back in the 70s. We used to see those on one large builder here in Madison, made it ordinary to put those on every house. And the purpose of that was, of course, to keep excess heat buildup out in the summer, which worked well. And then in the winter, you could pull excess moisture, I guess, out with them. They were sometimes hooked up with just a thermostat, sometimes with a thermostat and humidistat. So is yours, Mike, got either one of those attached to it, or is it simply a manual-operated system?
It's simply manual. I've kind of got switches located throughout the house that I can flip and turn them on. So when should I have them on, and when should I have them off?
I guess that's up to how hot you feel in the summer. And actually, without making a light of it, in the wintertime, if it was my house and I had that ability, I'd be checking up there after a prolonged cold spell and see if you're getting a moisture buildup again on the nail ends. If you see frost on the nail ends, that's excessive moisture. That would be a perfect time to turn that fan on and help pull the moisture out of the attic. Summertime, up to you. If you want to put a thermometer up there, and if it gets up 150 degrees or so, you could say, well, I'll turn this fan on. That'll help. But other than that, it could be kind of costly to hook up a humidistat and thermostat system to it.
Okay. Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Ron in Grand Marais, Michigan, up next here. Let's go there. Hi, Ron.
Hi, thank you, guys. I stayed for the first time last winter in my cabin up in the Upper Peninsula here. It was built actually as a hunting camp and apparently not to be lived in the winter. But it's a modified A-frame, so they have drywall up 4 feet. And they have that insulated with the paper type insulation. And they also put that in the soffits that overhang, 16 inches or so. And then it goes up 16 feet to the ceiling. But there is no ceiling. It's just the rafters, And I was just wondering, economically, how could I try and insulate that? There are no vents or anything. And the problem I had last year, the wood stove kept it fairly warm. But then I had, of course, ice dams build up 16 inches in from the roof edge when, where there was no heat. And then, of course, the water would run down the roof and came down inside the walls and flooded the floor. So that was a mess.
Oh, that sounds awful.
Yeah. But I want to stay here so I don't have to rent in the winter. And I just don't have a lot of money to put, to modify the house. And I wondered if there's anything I can do.
Is it... refresh me again. How many inches of insulation are in the batting that's in the rafters?
There's no insulation in the upstairs at all. There's no, it's just the roof.
Well, it can't be helped without insulation. I mean, that's the problem. You're getting the ice dams, and the heat loss can run down the rafters. So not insulating that upper part probably is contributing to the ice dams down below, because the moisture is going up, or the heat's going up, causing moisture, and it's running down the rafters. And there's it won't be solved until you fully insulate the conditioned or living area, I don't think.
Okay, so I couldn't just insulate part of the upstairs and then, clean the insulation out of the soffits and have it,
Boy, without seeing the building, again, and I'm not trying to cop out on this, but this sounds a little more complicated, and you probably would do better to have somebody in the industry come on out and take a look at it with you.
Okay.
This sounds just a little bit more complicated than we could answer right here.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, that's one of those that's probably going to have to insulate, though.
Yeah, you can't make it work without stopping the heat flow.
Heidi in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Heidi.
Hi there.
What's on your mind?
Well, we have a 1950s Cape Cod in Milwaukee area, and last fall we remodeled the upstairs. There's two bedrooms upstairs. We had them take down the 70s paneling and re-insulate the bedroom up there and also the other bedroom. The other bedroom is not finished. There's no drywall, but I noticed earlier this spring that there is some water on the opposite side of the vapor retardant. There's just like dried water drips kind of that's gone through the insulation. So I'm concerned that I have some condensation going on in the attic, and my attic fan recently broke. So is it worth it to replace the fan up there, or how should I proceed?
Hmm. Well, the area where you saw the water, evidence of water drops in your vapor retarder, was that an uncovered area that was just insulation and vapor retarder only?
Correct. There's no drywall on that part.
Okay. That's not uncommon if there's no drywall. Now we're down to its wall system. A wall system should be a complete system. You need the surface covering the insulation and the vapor retarder, or you'll see that. That's why they call it a wall system. And if it was intended to be left that way, we'd leave it that way all the time, but we don't. We cover that. And it's a scientific phenomena that will occur, because that vapor retarder doesn't have the same ability to not process the water that either a drywall or a paneling could do.
Okay. So I should add some drywall.
There you go. Finish the wall system. Yeah.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. And we've had some callers and emailers wondering about your number again, so your phone number. So, Renee, what's that number for?
Well, you can call 608-845-7625, or we also have an 800 number for those outside of the local calling area, 1-800-845-9415, or you can visit our website at www.rockweilerinsulation.com. And we have all sorts of information, videos, and we just put on a brand new iTools site or application from our manufacturer that you can input information from your house and see what kind of insulation levels you need.
Oh, and again, repeat those again for me. What's the numbers?
608-845-7625 and 800-845-9415.
Renee, Gary, thank you so much. It was wonderful. I hope you'll come back and do this again with us.
Oh, we'd be happy to.
It was our pleasure.
Thank you so much. Renee Wilson is Vice President of Operations for Rockweiler Insulation. Gary Rockweiler, founder and president. It's a family-owned company in Verona. It's been going since 1983. Lots of good information there, and we'll get them back, and we'll do this again. But we're going to switch gears a little bit on you now and talk about collectibles. What's hot and what's not in collectibles? That next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.